This is Nijan Footy with Sam Wykes and Chinirao Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Whakalofa lahi atu to all my Niuean listeners and to everyone else. Welcome to Nijan Footy, where we go deep on all the incredible Pacifica talent in the rugby league and rugby union worlds. My name is Sam Wykes, and with me each week is the Cook Island Rugby League shui lover, Tinarau Arona T, the
shui lover. Kia rana, Sammy, and kia rana to you listening. What's up with the shui lover?
Well, it's apparently you've drunk out of your shoe, and I'm not here to throw stones because I've done it myself a couple of times.
And you know what we say, Sammy? Happy wife, happy life. So before I get started, I just want to wish my wife a happy birthday.
I was like, where's this going with the shoey?
But today on our show, we have Dan Leo. He's represented Samoa. He's played 39 caps for the Manu Samoa, and he's currently the Pacific Rugby Players Welfare Boss.
Yes, big Dan Leo.
You know what else is special about Dan? He's made a documentary called Oceans Apart. And he tells, you know, he's one of the first players to speak out for change in the Pacific for rugby players. So really interested to hear in his story and his and to chat with him.
Yeah, he's been a big advocate for change for the Pacifica rugby players. What he's done has been incredible. I played against him in 2011 when the Western Force toured to Samoa. Big man, really big man, and he's doing some incredible things there.
And then we also have Nijan MasterChef with the return serve, because you made me bring in the minus last week and you couldn't stop eating it. I thought, let's get that famous otto of yours.
I was so full after eating that. Literally, I know you had to keep the show going because I just kept shoveling one more spoonful in and then trying not to sound like I was eating while we're on radio, but geez, it was nice.
I was quite upset too, because usually we go for a run down on the show after, and we like to grab some lunch, maybe some sushi. But you jumped in the taxi and took off, and I was like, oh, sweet then.
Nah, but I've got the otter here. It's going to be nice. It's going to be for all of us to share, so looking forward to it.
Moment of the week.
Our moment of the week comes from two outstanding Tongans, massive Tongans, Andrew and David Fifita. You've played with both of them.
Yep.
Talk us through what we saw on social media when they both greeted each other.
So David's been asked to go back to the UK to play for our beloved Wakefield Trinity and to try and save them from relegation.
Oh, wow.
And it was his 150th game for Wakefield, and his twin brother Andrew decided to surprise him and travel over the seas to the UK, and oh, what a welcoming it was from Dave.
I wish we could play the audio, but there's too many beeps in there to make it listener friendly. But that was beautiful to see him just walking down the street with his shirt off, Andrew coming from behind just yelling out, and turns around of just that. You wouldn't think that they were just brothers because the way they greeted each other then, but it was a big hug. And a special moment for those two boys.
It's when you welcome someone like that, it's normal at Western Sydney. So you know those two boys were brought up out at, I think it was Doonside, Blacktown?
Yeah, Doonside. They were from Doonside area.
But it was very special moment, and it was cool that we all got to witness it on social media.
Nisa Bulavinaka, my name is Kempisi Maafu. You're listening to Nijan Footy Podcast. Hope you enjoy.
Like I said last week, Sammy, it's the business end of the NRL.
Let's get to it.
All NRL games are on ABC Radio Australia. There's only one round until the finals, and there's two spots left for four teams fighting for two spots left in the top eight. We have the Raiders, the Rabbitohs, the Cowboys, and the Roosters. But because these two teams are not going to make the finals, I thought I'd share their games today on T's Top Lines.
Oh, that's good of you. Showing a bit of love to the people that are going to finish up early.
Well, we'll be talking about these teams in the finals. So my first one, Fijian Flyer scores four tries against the reigning champions. Can you take a guess who, Sam?
it's not Semi Radradra because he's left, but it's his other Fijian mate that took over him.
And he can't remember his name.
Mike Asivo.
Mike Asivo, that's the one. So in their last game of the season, due to having a bye next week and not able to make the finals, the Parramatta Eels have gone out in style, beating the back-to-back champs, Penrith Panthers, 32-18. You could tell the Eels were hungry for this win, turning up in all the effort areas. You know, when props are recovering loose balls and chip kicks, you know your team is switched on. So that's what I thought the Eels done. Tor Samoa skipper, Junior Bolo, he led the way from the front, making 175 metres with 67 post-contact metres. But, like I said in my headline, my Nijan player for this game was none other than the powerful Fijian winger, Mike Asivo, scoring 4 tries for the Eels on the left wing.
Linked up with Mike Asivo, he stumbles and dives for the goal line and he's over. Long ball away to Mike Asivo, and the flying Fijian says Vanaka Bakalevu. He's over to score in the corner. Quick hand, Simonson, away to Mike Asivo. He's loving this Penrith right side defence because they are clueless. Simonson away to Mike Asivo. Signal for the boundary because Mike has got 4.
He's got more tries in one game than I did my whole career, T. 4 in the one.
And my next headline, the Sea Eagles swoop on the struggling Bulldogs. For the Sea Eagle fans, you know, this was an entertaining match to watch. 42-24, the Sea Eagles won. Manly made 12 line breaks in the 80 minutes of footy. Niuean International, so I noticed that you introduced or welcomed everyone in Niuean. Whakalofa lahi atu.
That's the one. Hopefully I said that right for our Niuean listeners.
So Niuean International and Manly prop Toa Fofoa Sipley was a great example. He took a carry, broke straight through the middle of the Bulldogs' defence, and less than 15 minutes later, Toa Fofoa runs the very same line, breaking through the same, not the same defenders, but Bulldogs defenders again, this time close to the line, and he scores next to the post. Another person who stood out, Tongan international Tolutau Kola. He was unbelievable. Here's his stats. Ready? Wait for this. So he took 21 runs. He had 3 line breaks, made 312 metres, 7 tackle breaks, and 3 try assists. You know, a huge night for Kola. He played fullback because the injured Tommy Turbo was out injured. And but this was my moment of the game. So a few minutes left on the clock. The Sea Eagles get a penalty right in front of the post. The score is 40-24 at the time to the Eagles, so the game's pretty much done. And the Manly captain, Daly Cherry-Evans, he turns to young Samoan deputant Gordon Chan Kum Tong and passes him the kicking tee and the ball to kick a goal in front of the post. I just thought it was a great gesture from the skipper, Daly Cherry-Evans. He created a special moment for Gordon and his family.
Can you give us a rundown, give me some context behind Gordon Chan, because it seemed like there was a lot of hype around his debut. Seems like he's a ball of energy because he's pretty short, isn't he?
Yeah, word on the street is that he's a vibe. And he's
a vibe.
He's a vibe and he brings a real good energy to that Manly squad. I reckon he's going to be one of those cult heroes for Manly Seagulls in the near future. But it was good to see that he had that moment and his family up in the crowd and got to see him kick the goal for Manly Sea Eagles.
Cherry Evans is going to kick for 2. Yeah. 40 points to 24. Gordon Chan Kum Tong is getting it.
How cool is that? Well done, Cherry Evans. And the crowd also acknowledge the humility and the generosity shown by Cherry Evans.
I was going to say it was a bit of a boring decision when you're leading by 16 with 3.5 to go, but it's a lovely moment for Gordon.
Look at him smile.
Gordon Chan Kum Tong on debut. It was almost a Mal Meninga toe poke straight over the black dot. He's got his debut points.
A huge weekend for rugby, Sammy, and some pretty cool results for our Pacifica teams as well.
You're not wrong there, T. 11 days away from the World Cup. the warm-up games, I think they're done and dusted. I'm pretty sure they
are. Is that
the
last one? Yeah, that's the last one. Yeah,
I know. I feel like I keep saying this is the last warm-up game, but no, this one is. 11 days.
The World Cup already. Come on.
I know. 11 days away. We're on. But what about this? We'll get to Fiji's one. We'll get to Fiji's analysis because what an upset that was. But I just want to highlight Samoa versus Ireland. Ireland are ranked number one. Samoa come out with a result like that to only narrowly lose 17-13. I was so impressed with their efforts and their intent to play for one another. You know those effort areas that coaches always talk about, showing up. It's not the massive hits or the big line breaks. It's those ones where you've got to get off the floor early, back to your feet. So after you make a tackle, get on your feet straight away, get another effort in. So those double efforts was so evident in that game.
It's those actions where the stat sheet don't show.
Exactly right. You're not wrong there. And that's why I was so impressed with Samoa. So they call it big, like back in game. They want you back in the game as fast as you can. And they sustained that because that first 30 minutes, Samoa actually under a lot of pressure. They leaked points early. Ireland put them under a lot of pressure with their kicking game, their contestables. And they won that aerial battle early on. Samoa, you know, kicked a couple of kicks out on the full. So like when they weren't in the 22, so they had to go back to set piece, but they didn't panic. They still showed up for each other. And as I said, those double efforts came in, and then 43 minutes into the first half still, like it was, went overtime. Scrum was about 22 meters out. They get a massive scrum penalty, Samoa. And then your cousin, Lima Sopoanga, steps up, kicks a penalty goal, and they go in front 10-7 at halftime. So after absorbing all that pressure, to not everything go their way, to then still be leading at halftime, like that was massive for them. And I think, you know, that's a credit to, I guess, Mapasua and their coaching staff to be able to build connection and bonds that allow you to fight for one another in those moments, which is going to put them in good stead for leading in for the World Cup. And you could just see it's almost like they were celebrating, like as if they won, you know. But the way they were getting around them, each other, It was like, oh, wow, this is a bit of a different Samoa team from Pacific Nations Cup. It seems like they're going to hit their straps at the right time. But unfortunately, they just couldn't quite get the job done and get the win. They were outstanding. I look forward to, what they're going to bring come World Cup time.
Have you been influenced by someone? Is your wife half Samoan or?
No,
is there
no.
Anyone like your Samoan boys or your friends or people in the community saying you don't speak enough about Samoa?
Well, one of our bosses is Samoa here at Radio Australia. Shout out to Inga.
all love to our Samoa family and community.
All good. It's that friendly rivalry. But but moving over to the Fiji-England game. That game there, what an outstanding test match that was. I think it was probably a similar story to Samoa. That first 30 minutes, they were under pressure. You know, England scored points really early. They gave away yellow card like later in that first half, so they were down to 14 men. But again, stayed composed, didn't panic, and they were able to, you know, change their momentum through that Fijian style of play. They were able to stand in the tackle, stay on their feet. Some fancy footwork from like Celestino Ravutamanda, Semi Radradja, standing on his feet, offloading. Like that's the Fijian game. And they delivered that, and they got a lot of tries off the back of it. Like Celestino Ravutamanda, talk about a player who has grown leaps and bounds over the last 12 months. He didn't even have a long-term contract with the Drua. He wasn't even really considered. It was an opportunity through someone else where they got stood down, and he ends up becoming the starting winger. And now look at him. And they got the chocolates, 30-22. First time ever, England has lost to a tier two nation, so-called tier two.
They're not tier two, man.
They're not tier two now. But that's the first time England's ever lost. So
imagine the parties that have been going on in Fiji over the weekend and then leading into the World Cup. How many jerseys would be sold? Whoever's making all that money from the jerseys, please share it with the Fijian team, because I know that they'll be selling a fair bit, you reckon?
Yeah, 100%. Suva, Nandi, Latoka. Big shout out to everyone over in Fiji, and I hope you're still drinking a lot of kava and partying hard, because it's going to be a massive 6 weeks coming up for the Fijian rugby union team. In other news, for the mighty Tongans, the Galatahi, the Sea Eagles, There's no Israel Folau. He hasn't overcome his knee injury. It's been niggling for a little bit. And he won't be a part of that squad, which is disappointing because he was looking the goods there in that Australia A game. Former Wallaby, Adam Coleman, he joins the side. He didn't play any games in that Pacific Nations Cup due to coming back from a shoulder reconstruction. He had one game off the bench for his club team over in France, and he joins the squad now. I saw him in a couple of photos and a couple of videos, you know, in the line-out area getting lifted, which is good signs, really good signs, because he'll be outstanding for the Tongans in that part of the game around set piece. Also, some big news. I know we touched on George Mwala, you know, his original 10-game suspension that he was going to receive for that tackle in the Canada game has now been dropped down to 5. But, you know, seems like he's had a lot of support from some big players. The one and only Sonny Bill Williams, he tweeted out to World Rugby, "If you're serious about our game and how they value our Pacifica brothers, they need to start by giving George Mwala another hearing, plain and simple." Hopefully that's all been heard and it's gone to the higher powers, because it looks like he's only going to miss 2 games for the World Cup, and he'll be right to play for Tonga. But that's all our rugby chat. It's not now time to probably get over to Shelley Long.
This is Nijan Footy.
It is time for my mum's favourite segment, and we're going to be joining the PNG Orchids superstar and also our North Queensland Cowboys representative in the NRLW, Shelley Long, for the long story short.
The long story short with Shelley Long.
Shelley, thank you for joining us. You know, it's a sad loss against the Eels.
I shouldn't be laughing.
How are you feeling, Shelley?
Yeah, I'm feeling a bit sore, a bit tired, exhausted. But like we said last week, we knew that Parramatta hadn't won any games and they were desperate and they outplayed us in the end. And I think they deserved that win. So credit where credit's due.
I forgot to ask you last week because you didn't play. Was there a reason why you didn't play last week, last round, and then play again this round?
Yeah, we've got a really young squad. We've got a lot of players who are new to the NRLW. I myself, like, I've been a part of the Dragons, but I've not necessarily played for them. So to be in the team and playing in the season, it takes a lot out of you. So our aim was to rest players who might need that break and to benefit throughout the rest of the season. I think I did all right, but I think I definitely needed that little break. There were things that I were able to work on throughout that week as well, reset and get myself right for last weekend.
How did you take that feedback? You know, because I'm assuming you want to play every game, regardless if a coach says, "Oh, you need a break." But how did you take it?
Yeah, I think I knew what was best for the team. I knew that was the right decision, and I always put the team first. So I think when I got told, you know, I was a little bit upset that I didn't get to play, but I said, right, this is a time where I can definitely improve on myself and improve with my work and with other things like my training and things like that. So I definitely took it as a positive, and I worked on myself that week.
Did your coach or any coaching staff members give you advice on what to work on during that time off or that rest period?
Not really. They just said, look, just have your rest. Yep. And I just took it as, look, there's some things that I definitely want to improve on, like my nutrition, because of work and training and things like that, my lunch breaks at work are really short. So I wanted to make sure that in that time that I wasn't, you know, playing, I was getting my nutrition right so that I was ready for the next week.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, hopefully you stay up there for the remainder of the season. But round 6 of the NRLW, I guess, what results caught your eye?
Yeah, so definitely Parramatta securing their first win of the season against the North Queensland Cowboys, 16 points to 12. It was definitely, like I said, a tough loss, but a great win for them. They sealed the deal with a couple of great kicks into the corner with their winger scoring. And then obviously in that last few minutes, they also got the 2-point conversion. The Titans downed St. George Dragons in a thriller, 23 points to 22. The Titans were amazing in that first half, and the Dragons definitely fought their way back throughout the rest of the game. The Sydney Roosters continue to dominate their run this season, beating West Tigers 48 points to 10. And the Broncos overcoming a fast start from Canberra Raiders team. The Broncos run away with the win, 40 points to 8.
Shelley, who is our star performer this round, our Nijan star performer?
Oh, I would definitely say Tefito Lafaeli. She's from the Broncos. She made her debut on the weekend after injuring her hand, which kept her from debuting in round one. But she was excellent for them and definitely a major key player in their win.
And what about, obviously, the clear favourites? Who are you going with? Is it the Roosters or is it the Knights?
Well, look, I think the Knights, after they lost to us, I think they definitely... they definitely got that fire in their bellies and they're on a roll. And I think that I'm excited to watch them play the coming games as well throughout the season.
Yeah, I think you girls kicked them into gear. And Roosters are still – did you say that over the cap, Sam?
Yeah, they are.
They're still
they
over
are.
The cap?
It's I've got to go off the record. I don't know for sure, but I saw someone with a boat and walking a new dog down the road in Bondi. But, I'm not here to judge. You do you at the end of the day.
This competition feels like it's gone in a blink of an eye. It's already round six. You play the Dragons this week in round seven at home in Townsville, who are on the same points as you. There's three rounds to go and still a tight race. But do you have that feeling of pressure to win this game coming up?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're going to feel the most pressure. We're very tight on the ladder with a bunch of other teams. And, you know, spots one and two, they're on the same points as well, and spots three and four are too. So it's a very close competition. We knew that one of our games that we had to win was last week. So even if we win, it has to be other teams have to lose for us to make that top four spot, which is going to be a challenge. But hopefully, it can work in our favour.
Any rugby union news?
So Rugby Australia has come out and said that the Rugby Australia, Australian Super Rugby Clubs Members Union and the Rugby Union Players Association have agreed to pursue a historical strategic reset of rugby in Australia. It's great to see that the players' voices have been heard and hopefully they do follow through on that and they do make some changes, not only in just the women's space but also the grassroots footy and the Sevens program as well.
Here's a question for you though, on that. Say, for instance, do you think it needs to be a separate entity arm or anything? Because at the moment, say we've got the Rugby World Cup happening and all the focus is on the Wallabies, but obviously the girls want change now or answers now. Do you think it needs to be sort of separate?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that because of the World Cup, there will be a delay in trying to get a response from Rugby Australia. I think that obviously with the pattern that's been set with Rugby Australia, the men might take precedence over the women. But I do think that the women's voices have been heard. So hopefully they do make those changes soon for them. I know that they've got the 15s coming up later in the year and they'll definitely need to get this sorted before then as well. Do you think that if the Wallabies stood behind the Wallaroos and said, look, we support you in this and we're there to help you and push that, that, you know, it's currently not equal at the moment, do you think that maybe Rugby Australia would come to the table a bit quicker than what they might do at the moment?
I think so.
Yeah, maybe you're probably not wrong, but at the same time, I don't think the boys are meaning not to probably support. I reckon they're just so focused on trying to get a result,
just the timing of it all.
I reckon yes. If it wasn't a World Cup year and the test matches and the test results that they're having, I reckon they 100% would have come out. But just the timing of it, I just think they've
they're dealing with their own pressures. Right,
do you think with the NRL, the men stood behind the women when we were discussing our CBA. Do you think that really helped? And I know that in that period of when we were trying to discuss the CBA, it was through our World Cup period. Do you think that that was something that played a role in how players played? You know, it helped a lot and it didn't really impact the way that you played.
Oh, I think the men's being involved with the women's as well was massive. It made a massive impact. They all fell under the same umbrella. Yeah. Under the RLPA, and the whole team at the RLPA fought for, you know, both sides. And I thought, I think it made a huge impact having the men on board.
Yeah, I agree. You guys are all aligned. I feel like the alignment's a lot better in rugby league and probably the same in AFL as well. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done behind the scenes.
But it is time for the big question, boys don't know. And this week, we wanted to ask you, Shelley, what sort of kilometres do the women run per game in the NRLW?
Well, I want to actually ask you guys, what do you think we run?
Oh, I'm a bit scared.
Okay, so Sammy, I'll start with you. How much, like, do you think you ran on average?
Are we going by position? Or just,
nah,
in general?
Just in general.
Just give me a general average.
I want to say 5.5 Ks.
I would run about 5.5, 6 K as a middle, and we play 80 minutes, so I'll play about 56. So I'm going to say 3 Ks.
Yes, well, guys, you were very low. We actually run pretty much about 7 Ks, 6 to 7 Ks each game. And on average, your spine players will run about 9 to 10 Ks, which is on par with the men.
And that's 10 minutes less too.
Oh, wow. Yes. You got me there. I was just assuming because I reckon even when I was playing, like, it would be about 6.
I'm sorry. My 3K was a total guess. I did not mean
any
harm.
Backtrack. Don't backtrack. It's out there.
That was a total guess.
Wow, that's impressive. That's really impressive.
Yes. Most people that you talk to, when they say, "Oh, like, you know, you only play women's footy, you mustn't run too much," and you're like, "Oh, I'm actually really sore and stiff. How many K?" And they ask you, "How many Ks did you run?" And you say, "About seven Ks, sometimes 7 to 8 on a good day." And they're like, "Oh, I've only assumed that maybe women run 3 to 4 Ks." And it's like, we actually run pretty much the same as men's, even though we play less minutes than them, we still manage to hit those meters.
It's probably why they play that long. Because of the load management.
It makes sense why I actually enjoy watching, because it seems more free-flowing, the women's game, because there's not, like, the wrestle's not as evident in the game where it slows it down. So there's more room to move. So it actually makes a lot of sense.
But anyway, that's why we ask the question, boys don't know. And thank you for that. That was very interesting. Shelley, thanks again. Good luck this week against the Dragons in Townsville. We're always supporting you from this side of the country.
Thanks, guys. See you next week.
Shot, Shelley. Nesian footy.
Thank you again to our good friend, Shelley Long. Right now, though, I've been waiting all week because I am starving and I've been looking forward to this otter. So let's get it on.
Challenge of the week.
Sammy!
Oh, you ready for this, mate?
Yeah, mate. I've purposely not eaten breakfast leading into it. Let's go.
Oh, actually, can you keep the mic going? Oh, I need to go get it from my bag because I had to be in the cooler bag. It was in the cooler bag.
Last week, I had my food prepped. It was all microwaved. I even brought him a fork. So I'll be surprised if he brought a fork. He might have to run to the kitchen. Ooh, that's a big bowl. I like it. All right, so you ready, Sammy?
Yeah, I'm back. Sorry, I just had to get it out of the cooler bag, make sure it's nice and fresh.
I can smell it from here. That smells good.
Here we go.
So we have it here, Sammy. Talk to me. What's in here? What are we looking at?
This is otter.
Yeah.
So it's done in cream, salmon, fresh salmon. Made sure I caught it myself. Went out there early in the morning.
In Maui over here.
I speared it. I dove down there, you know, gutted it, deboned it, everything.
He's kept it in a cooler bag as well. I can feel it cold in my fingers.
It's got spring onion, a little bit of chili. And a couple of other secret ingredients I can't give it on here. Yes,
very nice. The presentation, I'll give that a 10 already. All right, let's go. One big gulp.
Yum, 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 yum. Holy, I can hear you chomping through that. Wowee.
Oh, that's good. That's really good.
I had some, you know how you brought like sides with it? I did have sides ready, but you know, when you live with a house full of kids and other people, and you leave it in the fridge and you don't put your name on it, people eat it. So the KFC was gone.
It got off.
Yeah, it was all gone. But it's all right. Tastes good by itself.
All right. I won't do what you done to me last week and just let you talk by yourself while I ate. But so you know the tuna when it's sometimes when you get otter or raw fish, it's too soft, or when you bite it, you don't get that consistency in that bite. That was perfect. The sizes of the fish, perfect as well. 2 centimeters by 2 centimeter cube.
Ooh.
In terms of flavor, outstanding. Fulfills all my, hunger desires. And I've even got that little kick of chili that's just coming now. That was like a late, like, little kick in the tongue. I like it.
Kick in the tongue.
So, who made this?
Look, I can't claim that. I know you've challenged me, but like yourself, we had to pass the buck on to people that know what they're doing. And it was my mother-in-law. So shout out to Lavania Tuitu'u. She always comes through with the goods when it comes to, you know, making the otter. Give me a rating. Remember this, my mother-in-law is a big listener. Nemanja Nondolo gave it 11.5 out of 10. So anything less, we can't air it.
I am not going to lie. It is up there with one of my favorite raw fish. We call it raw fish or otter. One of my favorites. So I'm going to say 15 out of 10 and beat the last score.
Yes. Yes.
So next week, Sammy, what you got for me?
Next week.
Another cooking challenge?
Not a cooking challenge because we don't do any of the cooking. So it's not. We've got to challenge each other at some point to do the heavy lifting. Believe you're in the grand final next week. And we are going to challenge you, or I'm going to challenge you, to go ask one of your fellow Nijan teammates just a few questions. I just want you to record on your phone, just basic ones, name, position, his heritage, best advice from one of those uncles. You know those uncle stories about playing footy and back in my day? See if he's got something special for us there. Favorite island jam. And the biggest question, what's T contributed to the Winnie Magpies since coming back from the UK besides stealing paychecks? So they're those questions. I'll get them down for you. If you can record them for us, bring it in. And we'll play that.
What's up, guys? Robert Liotta here from the Wallabies. Tuning in, listening to Nijan Footy. Less age.
This week, our special guest is former Manu Samoa lock Dan Leo, who had a wonderful career playing over in England and in France between 2005 to 2016. 39 caps for Manu Samoa. But he also played for the first combined Pacific Island team back in 2006, which we refer to now as Wanda Pacifica. He's been a massive advocate for change and always spreading the word for Pacifica people in rugby union. And he's now the rugby union player welfare boss for the Pacific. We welcome to the show the man, Dan Leo. Welcome to the show, brother.
Hello, guys.
One of the big reasons we wanted to get you on Nijan Footy was just you've been a real, you know, massive inspiration and a trailblazer for being an advocate for Pacific rugby. You know, you've had a doco that's called Oceans Apart that's come out, and you've spoken out against, you know, world rugby and also in-house as well, all the challenges that Pacifica players face. What did you see early on to sort of say, I need to make a stance here?
Yeah, I think it was just that lack of a voice. You know, for us as Islanders, we've always sort of just, you know, we're known as the grunt workers in all rugby teams. But when it comes to sort of those leadership roles and having a say, even in teams, you know, we don't always put our hands up. You know, we prefer to, I guess, lead by our actions. But it's important that we do have advocates, particularly in that, you know, those corridors of power, the people that are making the decisions around the direction the sport's going. And for me, there was a lack of that Pacifica presence in those corridors. I think things are slowly changing now, and obviously, you know, as we, you know, as the more successful our teams are at this World Cup, the more that'll give us, a commanding position to be able to say, look, we want more representation there. So it's really important that the, our teams, our Pacifica teams, are doing well to give us that that momentum. But for me, it was also important as well. You know, you see a lot, and you boys would have both seen it with, you know, in the islands, is that we're not just pushing for improvement from other organisations, but also looking introspectively at ourselves as well. At our, you know, what can we do better as a people in terms of bettering ourselves? And that's where we had to turn the mirror on ourselves and our own unions and some of the systems there that probably weren't at the level required to be successful in an international rugby scene. And they're not out of, you know, spite or anything, but just, you know, some of that comes down to a lack of resources. You know, a lot of our unions are, you know, rely on volunteers to drive their programs. But it was just about, yeah, more about a representation sort of level, making sure that, you know, we weren't just providing, you know, 20% of all professional players, but making sure that, you know, we're well represented in those corridors of power, and also making sure that a lot of the funds that are generated by, you know, our players and, you know, in this great game, some of those are, you know, equitably being channeled back to the islands and reinvested in the islands for the next generation.
You mentioned their finances and being pushed to the right direction. Are there any other, you know, specific examples that you took a stand for, to fight for, and being involved, whether that was in also in the documentary Oceans Apart or just a part of the union?
Yeah, I think the hardest one is, you know, the probably the proximity of politicians to our rugby unions. There was your prime minister picking the team, or you know the seventh team's done well, so he's got the power to, you know, bring those boys in at the expense of guys who've been training all the way up to a World Cup. For me, there was some transparency issues there that we, again, you know, part of that process. You know, for successful teams, is the head coaches and the selectors having that autonomy to be able to, you know, to make their selections stick. So that was probably the hardest thing, especially for us as Ireland and me as a Samoan, is, you know, actually having, you know, questioning not just people in our unions, but people as high as, you know, the Prime Minister. And you know, the Prime Minister of Samoa, you know, he's connected to a lot of high chiefly titles. He's not just the Prime Minister, but he's recognised in all of those village councils, which, you know, my dad had you know, questioned me, you know, almost every day, is this right? And make sure you're doing it respectfully, you know, doing it in a way that, you know, is right, because it's not just about the questions you're asking, but it's about how you ask those questions is so important for us.
Yeah.
And our mana is Pasifika and Māori.
I'm just going to play a little bit of audio here, and then we'll touch on it.
My name is Dan Leal, and I'm a former Samoa rugby player. Dropped from the team after confronting corruption, I now want to find out whether rugby is intentionally exploiting the Pacific Islands, or whether our own political interference and corruption is in fact what's holding us back.
So just from that little bit of that clip, that audio, and what you have just mentioned, like, how hard was that for you to be the one to first stand up and go against some, like, I guess, big powers?
Yeah, I think it probably stems back to the 2000, I think it was about 2011 World Cup, and I was a young, sort of a average age player around then, and I was really inspired by the stand that some of the other leaders that went before me made. Honoré Swalga, Selala Mapusua, who's now head coach, some of these guys who were, you know, guys who I'd been, you know, I was the fringe Super Rugby player. These guys were at the height of their, you know, their game. And they made that stand to really question where a lot of the money had gone in our Rugby World Cup fundraisers, because it was obvious that it wasn't coming to the team. And, you know, so they put themselves out there big time to ask those questions then, and probably didn't get the answers that they were looking for back then. So I guess I just saw my stepping up as an extension of the good work and the platform that they'd laid. Obviously, I was in a position that was easier for me to do that. You know, I don't live in Samoa. I've only got one. My mum's Palangi, so my dad's. I've only got one Samoan parent. So you know, it's and I'm, you know, as I said, like the proximity for me going back to the islands is easier, so I can call things from the outside and not have to worry too much about the implications that will have too much on my family. But you know, and with our administrations. But the bigger problem here is world rugby and the way that the international game is being administered that facilitates some of that corruption and mismanagement to happen. They're happy to turn a blind eye to it because it means that they've always got an excuse to not have to give us more, because they say, oh, you can't even look after what we give you, so how can you guys ask for more? So yeah, that was sort of that trajectory that we took on the documentary, which was really interesting to me, and sort of gave me faith actually back in the islands that actually, you know, buck doesn't necessarily stop with our Prime Minister and Union, there's bigger powers at play here.
What was the reaction that you got from the people in Samoa and also your family and your networking group?
Firstly, all Pasifika people sort of were massively behind the project and still are behind the wider goals of Pacific rugby players' welfare. Because everyone's seen and heard the stories, people have been part of fundraising drives that and heard about embezzlement of funds and all that sort of stuff. So it's, everyone's got an experience, and everyone wants to see us change. And we know that if we can get over that hurdle, success is there for the taking. So the Samoa people are great. Yeah, I think in terms of the unions themselves, I think it was mixed emotions because they agreed and supported our drive for, the eligibility changes, world rugby changes, giving us more of a voice around the table. But then they didn't like so much of the fact that we were looking at some of the deficiencies on themselves as well. Mixed emotions, I suppose, as you can imagine. So even now, when I go back to the Samoan Rugby Union, I see, there's a lot of smiles to my face and well done. But yeah, it's sort of, love hate relationship at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, I could imagine, man. And it's been 3 years since the release of the documentary. Have you seen an impact it's had in the rugby game?
Yeah, I think so. The biggest one is obviously the eligibility rules, which have allowed so many Samoans and Tongans in particular, a couple of Fijians to come back, that may have been captured by Tier 1 nations. And that's really pleasing to see that the immediate impact that that's having on all of our teams. Tonga beating Australia A earlier this year, Samoa coming very close to Ireland. Those results, I believe, are directly associated to the personnel that we've now got at our disposal. So that's really awesome to see. The CEO of World Rugby, 2 weeks after we released that film in the UK, he resigned, and I believe there was pressure that was due to heavy public pressure from particularly the European UK audiences who watched the Oceans Apart was on Amazon Prime over there, and it got I think the film within the first 2 weeks got 500,000 views. And what it's like these days, people jump on Twitter, and the impact and from that on social media had immediate impacts on some policy that we saw in World Rugby. So that's great, but the job's not done. We've still got some goals that we want to see. I'd still like to see our teams remunerated for the matches that we play. So again, Fiji, when they played yesterday against England, they get nothing from that. And it was I think there was about 60,000 people in that stadium.
No way.
That's the same when Samoa played Ireland. There's no match fee share, so that's probably high on the agenda. And also that seats around the table. At the moment, you've got those Tier 1 nations who have all got 3 votes whenever anything's been considered. And I think Samoa and Tonga have probably got 1 between the two of them. Fiji have got 1 or 2 now, but it's still not equitable in terms of how much we bring to the international game.
Man, it's hard to fathom when you say that, that they're still not getting part of that shared revenue from the game day. Like, it's... Yeah, that's it blows my mind that that's still happening. But in your opinion, why is World Rugby sort of reluctant to change? What are they scared of in terms of if they just do things, properly, and help out the Pacifica countries?
Yeah, well, what I learned, this was a hard sort of pill to swallow over the 4 or 5 years that I was campaigning, was that World Rugby don't actually have any power over any policy. They can make suggestions, and all they can do is make a suggestion and bring it to vote. And those countries, as I said, they have 3 votes each. They make the decision. So, and everyone just, they're quite protective in terms of just wanting to do what's right for their national game. So obviously it's, they see it as not being in their best interest if they have to go and play Fiji or Samoa, because they're going to get no money out of it under the current agreement. So there's a lot of it's quite stifled in terms of we all think World Rugby is this over arcing power that, but you realize that it's, you know, those tier one nations, particularly the Six Nations these days, that's where all the money is, that are, you know, they're the puppet masters, and world rugby is almost comes under them. So again, it's, that's a difficult one to tackle in terms of how do we move forward, when they've got that mindset. But, it's over us, to us and our generation really to, you know, hopefully find solutions, I believe.
Yeah. Have you got any ideas on how we do get an extra vote, or how we do get a seat at that table, you know, with those top tier nations?
Yeah, well, for me, it's all about this World Cup. You know, we've got to build brand power in our unions, and you know, in the emblems that we represent. The All Blacks are in a different situation, you know, because they've got brand power, and everyone recognises that. You know, that silver fern, they get a match fee when they go and play it, so they can negotiate, because everyone wants to go and see the All Blacks play against England at Twickenham. They know they'll sell it out. They'll get, you know, 5 million a match revenue from TV. And for me, that's why it's so important that our results are, are right this year at the World Cup, so that we start, you know, building that brand power that allows us to leverage that and start charging, you know, and saying, look, we're only going to come play. You know, we're not going to come and play for free anymore. We're not going to be your puppets anymore, and and go and play against, you know, the Romanias and the Georgias every year to try and grow the game. Actually, we want to, you know, we want to be paid well, and we want equitable share in the power that and this MSA. So it's so important, really, that we get that right. So obviously, you know, that eligibility rule that changed was one way that they could you know, give us a bit more influence and results quickly without them having to dip into their pockets. We've got to keep putting pressure on them to share, because ultimately, you know, yes, having players come back to Samoa that have been developed and, you know, by New Zealand is good, but unless we have the resources long term, that's going to dry up, you know. So we've got to maximise this next 5 years, I believe, where we do get those players back, because it's already getting harder. You know, they've just said now it's a 5-year stand down period. They increase that from 3 years to 5 years if an ex tier one player is going to come back now and play for a tier two. So we really got to maximize this next 3 years, 3-4 years, these two World Cup year cycles, to get our unions not just recognizable, but profitable is another key as well. Making sure that our unions are self-sufficient, so that we don't have to rely on handouts. It's a big problem, is they give us a little bit and they say, look, shut up, don't say anything, otherwise we'll pull that little that we give to you away. And at the moment, if they pull that little amount of funding, we fall flat on our faces. So we've got to get to a point where we don't rely on scraps so that we can ask for more.
Could you, for our listeners that don't understand, could you explain what the big change, so the rules before and then the rules now? So
I guess in a nutshell, if you played for another nation, even if you were born, so if you played for New Zealand, even if you were born in Samoa, once you played for New Zealand at any senior level, so that being Sevens, New Zealand A, New Zealand Māori, or the All Blacks, you were lost. You were this term captured, which again, captured encapsulates how, you know, that's a term that you'd liken to slavery as opposed to rugby, and I hated that term. But you're basically captured for life to that nation. They overturned that. They said that you could, if you hadn't played for that another nation for 3 years, you could play. You could go back to another nation heritage.
Man, there's so much to unpack there, from I guess the politics and behind the scenes of what's going on in the Pacific space to have that representation. So I'm glad we have someone like yourself and others out there like Hale Tipole really pushing towards to make sure there's some equal opportunity for all the players, because that 5-year stand down is ridiculous. On that note, man, I wish we could talk for a bit longer about all this, but we really appreciate your time. Thank you for everything you're doing in that space, and we wish you all the best.
Likewise, guys, man. Love what you guys are doing. You know, it's important that we have representation, not just in the rugby halls, but in the media. Love your work. Keep it up, boys.
This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.